Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Coming up, we're going to talk about baseball team chemistry with Joan Ryan, author of the book Intangibles, which just came out today, Tuesday, April the 28th. It unlocks the science and soul of team chemistry. We're also going to talk to Ray Woodson as well. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. TPC Harding Park is closed right now per the city and county shelter-in-place order until further notice. However, TPC Harding Park is pleased to announce the 2020 PGA Championship has been rescheduled for August the 3rd through the 9th. For additional information, visit tpc.com/Harding Park or feel free to contact 102PGA at pgahq.com. Now, here's the conversation I had with author Joan Ryan, author of the book Intangibles, as she joined us as part of our webcast podcast on Tuesday. Joan, I got this book from you and I poured through it. I just absolutely loved it. It appeals to such a wide audience, not just baseball fans, but I think not just sports fans. I think if you're in a workplace and you're thinking about team chemistry and is it meaningful, this book really explains it. Great job, Joan.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I'm so glad you like it. You know, it took me, I'm almost embarrassed to say 10 years.
Wow.
I know. I did write the book with Benji Molina about his family and the three catchers and his dad in Puerto Rico during that time. But I worked on it for 10 years, did about 150 interviews and, you know, and interviews with scientists and evolutionary biologists and all the rest of it. And it was so fascinating. I couldn't stop researching it. And finally, I said, I better just finish this thing and get it out.
Well, I mean, yeah, the interviews are fascinating. You know, there is definitely a lot of interest, I think, for Giants fans, because there are quite a few Giants interviews and references to the teams going back to the 1980s. And, you know, those great teams they had in 87 and 89. And then, of course, the World Series championship team. So, I mean, it really spanned, you know, several decades for Giants fans to pay attention to.
It did. And you know, I don't know how many people know, but I know you do, Joe, is that I've been the media consultant for the Giants as I'm writing books and all the rest of it. So it was interesting to me to be able to go into the clubhouse as a part of the team in a lot of ways. So I got to see the dynamics in a way I never could as a journalist, which I was for several decades. And so and to be able to really talk to players on a deeper level about the interpersonal relationships that are, you know, really at the core of team chemistry.
Yeah, when I think of team chemistry, for me, I've always thought that it existed, Joan. I mean, even from going back to when I played Little League, it felt like if you had the right players on a team and you had the right personalities, the right attitude, that you were going to play better. It's just no question about it. But it was interesting in reading the book. At times, there were folks that you talked to, you know, managers and players that weren't always on board with the idea of team chemistry. They didn't even want to think about that. I mean, some people think it doesn't exist, but I thought it was interesting when you were talking about Jim Leland and you talked to him. He contradicted himself. He was saying, you know, talent is everything. But then at one point he starts saying, wait a minute, you know, veterans must have a good attitude. So guess what? That's team chemistry.
Right. I mean, at the core of team chemistry is really human nature, right? It's about how we all, you know, our brains evolved over 3 million years and quadrupled in size, mostly to accommodate all of our social wiring, not our intellect. Because, you know, as we all know, you know, we're tribal animals that had to rely on each other to survive. So we really are wired to connect. And everything about us is contagious. And I'm looking at you. I know people can't see you as I'm seeing you now because you're not on the screen. and I can see your eyebrows are furrowed. You're looking at something, and like every twitch of our muscles, you know, every change in tone of voice, everything about us is embedded with signals and messages to each other. And then I respond to your facial expression and body language and all the rest of it. And then you're responding to mine and back and forth and back and forth. Now you can imagine in a clubhouse or a locker room with all of that going on at all times, you know, it matters who's in there, and it matters, you know, what they're thinking and feeling and behaving, that it affects really not just our moods and our mindsets, but it affects our hormones and our heart rate and our metabolism, all of it. And that's what was so fascinating to me. It's like, okay, there is really something to team chemistry, given that all of this is true.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people will sometimes not want to talk about team chemistry because maybe it sort of takes away from the talent factor. But when you think about what Tony La Russa said in your book about respect, trust, caring, I mean, those are all a big part of sports. It's not just the athletic part of it. And as you mentioned in the book, it's complex. You know, life is complicated, we think, but it's complex when you start thinking about team chemistry and how you put it all together.
It is. And team chemistry, like, you know, so much of what it means to be human is complex, meaning it's like an ecosystem or an economy where you change one element and it can create this domino effect of all kinds of changes. It's the, you know, Lorenz's butterfly, you know, a butterfly, you know, flaps its wings in, you know, South America and all of it, you know, and then there's eventually a tornado in Oklahoma. Right? Or nothing can happen when the butterfly flaps its wings. Like, so much of it is unpredictable. So, you know, in baseball, for instance, you know, we have 26 players, you know, you change one of those players out, it could be a huge effect. It could have no effect. It could have some effect. And that's why it's hard to have a prescription for how do you build team chemistry, because we often don't know how, you know, this person is going to affect this person, because maybe in their last team, they had a different effect on that group of people. So yeah, it is endlessly fascinating.
It is. I mean, just think about the general manager's job in baseball. I mean, you basically have to be a psychologist to try to figure all of that out. I mean, a lot of it is a guessing game. And a lot of times, I think you just have to get lucky, right? I mean, sometimes you just don't know how combustible a situation could be or how great it could be.
Yeah, I mean, there is some serendipity involved in everything. You know, there's serendipity involved in, you know, meeting your spouse. I mean, all of it, you know, so much of it is serendipity. But leadership matters so much. And it's not just front office leadership and manager or coach leadership. It's the leadership within that clubhouse. You know, now the manager, and to some extent the front office, has to create a culture. And the culture, as Tony La Russa, as you referred to, it's a culture of trust, caring, and purpose. So, you know, every human relationship is based on trust. You don't have a friendship unless you have trust, right? You don't even have a good working relationship with anybody without trust. So that's kind of the foundation of all of it. So if you can create that type of culture, as Bruce Bochy helped to do, and some of those players did in 2010, when you had one of the weirdest clubhouses ever with Aubrey Huff and Brian Wilson and all these guys. And yet nobody on paper would have said, oh, I'm picking them for the World Series, right? And that Aubrey Huff would become a leader. I mean, the guy, I mean, really, like, kind of was a loser, you know, as a clubhouse mate for his whole career. And he kind of was again right after 2010. But during that one shining moment with those guys at that time, he actually, and a lot of players had to convince me of this, that he was actually a team leader.
Well, I'm glad you brought him up because recently I did a podcast with Jeremy Affeldt and we were talking about Huff not being invited to the 2010 reunion, which is scheduled for this year. Who knows if we even have a baseball season. But Huff, as he said too, he was a leader on that team. They love the guy. And now you've got him, you know, getting out on social media and making outrageous statements. And Affeldt agrees with the Giants to not invite him to the reunion. So it's strange in a way that you have a guy who was a leader or one of the leaders of that team is being vilified now basically because of the actions that he's taken in recent years.
Right. And what he told me, because we did talk for quite a long time when I was writing the book, what changed him didn't come from inside. It came totally from outside. And for whatever reason, some of those young players started to look up to him. I mean, I really don't know why or how, but they did. And so the fact that he was trusted, now all of a sudden he trusted back. You know, I just saw this guy that was sort of a jester. He had a lot of energy and all of it. So I didn't see him as the team leader. And everybody said, oh, no, he was. And of course, Pat Burrell, you know, helped a bit on that. And yet it really showed to me, and this is why I have a whole chapter in the book about it, is that it showed me how powerful a really strong culture can be in creating team chemistry. So a really great culture of trust and caring, as Tony La Russa referenced, really bends all the members of the group, all those players toward each other and a shared purpose. And when that happens and you have that trust and that bonding, that's when team chemistry emerges. But it has to start from that culture of trust. And that did happen in that 2010 clubhouse, that those players, a lot of young players, as you remember, and they looked at Huff like this veteran, he had a big personality, and they started to just look toward him for advice and wisdom and motivation. And no one was more surprised than Aubrey Huff that these guys were looking at him that way. But it also goes to show that when you feel trusted, you trust in return. And it becomes contagious. And part of the reason it's contagious is because when we do feel trusted, we release oxytocin into our bloodstream. And that is kind of the bonding hormone, the love hormone. It kind of floods our brains with this sense of really feeling connected to other people. And so you think of a clubhouse and this, you know, these hits of oxytocin are just pinging around that clubhouse. And that is, you know, part of the true chemical part of team chemistry.
Oxytocin. I'm glad you pronounced it because I'm reading it going, wait, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah. Not oxycodone.
You saw the book cover there. And by the way, the book Intangibles, we're talking about it here on the day that it comes out. It came out today, Joan. So you must be really excited about that.
I got boxes of this book today. I mean, literally today, which is just coincidence that I got them today. But it, you know, for a writer, this is my fifth book, but it never gets old when you open that box and 10 years, you know, went into this tiny little thing, but I'm really happy with the way it came out and I'm really glad I'm done writing.
Well, you know, we were talking about the 2010 team. Now you fast forward a couple of years, 2012, and you've got Hunter Pence on that team and he's the great leader. And then you move forward and you think about Matt Duffy, a young kid joining a team that's a World Series championship team. And then he helps them and he's made to believe that he is going to be a big part of the team. And I'm not sure that he believed it. You know, I'm a rookie. I'm just getting called up. You know, what am I going to contribute to a team that's already won? But Hunter Pence made sure that he knew that he was going to be a big part of it. And that's part of the team chemistry angle of it, right?
It really is. And we think, well, belief is just in your head and you believe something and, you know, whatever. But we know placebos, right? We know that, you know, every test, you know, all the research has shown that if you take a placebo and your doctor is telling you this is going to really help with your pain, your brain triggers the release of chemicals getting ready to relieve your pain, because your brain is going there. So it's a sugar pill, but your brain has responded to it because you believe it's going to help you, that it often does. It's and one neuroscientist actually used this analogy. He said, you know, did you ever watch Dumbo? And I said, yeah, I watch Dumbo. And he was able to fly because of his ears, but he didn't believe it. So he was given that magic feather. This magic feather is going to help you fly. And because he believed he could fly, then he could fly. And it's like guys like Johnny Gomes, right? You know, his teammates believed he made them better. 242 hitter, you know, nobody's pick for the top 10 of anything. But they really believed it. And time after time after time, a pattern emerged in Johnny Gomes' career that his teams, you know, very little help from him as far as stats, his teams won. Because, and I asked that neuroscientist, I said, yeah, but where's the scientific evidence that Johnny Gomes, because they believed it, helped them win? He said, well, did they perform better? Well, yeah. Did they win? Well, yeah. There's your scientific evidence. It actually happened.
Well, that's the thing. It's hard to quantify team chemistry, but when you win, and Johnny Gomes is a big part of it, and you tell a great story, Joan, about the 2013 World Series. The Red Sox, we know they won that World Series, but they were trailing in that series, and Johnny Gomes hit a big three-run home run in Game 4 to tie the series. And he wasn't even supposed to be in the lineup. Daniel Nava was supposed to be in the original, or was in the original lineup. They were doing a platoon, but the players went to the manager, John Farrell, and said, no, we want Johnny Gomes in there. And he listened, and it actually worked out.
It actually worked out. And it was crazy because at that point, Johnny Gomes hadn't had a hit in the series, and he may have had one hit in the whole postseason. And so, you know, John Farrell is looking at these guys. I mean, it was Big Poppy and Dustin Pedroia and Jake Peavy and John Lester, all of them. They go in there, the leadership group, and just said, you got to change the lineup. And John Farrell's like, I've posted the lineup. It's out, you know, it's already out on social media. I'm not changing the lineup. And all of a sudden, Shane Victorino, Daniel Nava goes to right field. Shane Victorino, suddenly there's a missive that goes out, you know, an alert that Shane Victorino came down with lower back tightness. And so Johnny Gomes going to left and Daniel Nava went to right. And I'm sure it's by coincidence that Johnny Gomes happened to hit a three-run homer, but they go on to win that game and they win the series. And those players will tell you to this day that he was a linchpin in, you know, and most people don't even know who Johnny Gomes is.
Well,
he's a huge influence, huge influence, very charismatic, you know, charismatic, a little Hunter Pence-y in that way.
We'll have more with Joan Ryan, author of the book Intangibles, right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. Let's take a look at a quote that was in your book from Dustin Pedroia, who is from Northern California as well, from the Boston Red Sox. He was saying that baseball is baseball. Numbers in baseball at that time of year are irrelevant. That's always been my mindset. Do I want Johnny Gomes up with a game on the line every time? I don't care if he doesn't have a batting average. You know you're going to get a good at-bat every time. He gives us a chance. You know he's never going to lack confidence, and he's never going to quit. I'll take my chances every time. So that goes right against the analytical era that we're in right now, where you're supposed to plug a player in because, hey, he's going to come through in this situation. Well, you know, that was completely the opposite of that.
Right. And, you know, oftentimes the analytics is correct because there's so much data behind it. And the way I look at it, and a lot of people are in either or camps, which is so puzzling to me, like why two things can't be true at the same time. And in fact, when you just really get down to its core, right, there's a lot of things that go into winning, but like two main influences, two main forces, right? One is you have to have a strategy. You have to know how to get the most from your team's strengths and try to mitigate their weaknesses. You have to know how to value your players in order to put together a roster you can afford, that you've got all your bases covered, all of that. And you know, we have the most brilliant people in front offices now really crunching these numbers and creatively producing data to show how best to win against this opponent with these players, right? Well, that's all great and hugely, hugely important. But it's actual human beings that have to carry out the strategy, right?
Yeah.
So you can have, you know, you can have the most brilliant strategy in the world, but if you don't have motivated, committed players who are feeling confident, who feel safe to take risks because they know their teammates have their back, all of those things go into having those players ready to meet the moment. And if you don't pay attention to that side of the equation, all you're going to have is great strategy. And yeah, you're going to win some games. But to me, the competitive edge today, you know, it's not analytics because everybody has analytics. So it's hard for a team to really have a huge advantage over their competitors. So it's the ones that have the cutting edge analytics, but then know how to get your actual human being players ready for every single game over, and we're talking about baseball, 162 games. And that's not easy.
Yeah, and that's what made some of those old school managers great. I mean, Bruce Bochy, you go back to Dusty Baker, and I always thought Dusty Baker was great at diffusing situations and dealing with the culture of his team, you know, the personalities. And one part of your book that I thought was very, very important is talking about the other side of the coin. I mean, there's the cancer on the team that could ruin everything, and there are players who are supremely talented that could be, as you called in the book, super disruptors, but I don't know, does it cancel itself out a little bit sometimes because you are a superstar player, yet you could be a super disruptor? And you brought up Barry Bonds and Jeff Kent as two examples in that case.
Yeah, wouldn't you think that a team that had two of the guys who were picked, I think, in the top five, and I believe it was Bleacher Report, of the top 10 worst teammates of all time. And I think Bonds and Kent both were in the list. And now you've taken two of those guys and you put them on the same team, you would think the whole thing is going to blow up. And in fact, the opposite was true. I mean, those Giants teams were among the best seasons the Giants have had until they won three World Series in 5 years. And what's interesting, Joe, is that I went into this book thinking that Barry Bonds was my super disruptor. So I was going to do a whole chapter on Barry Bonds and how the cancer in the clubhouse works and blah, 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 only to discover after doing tons and tons of interviews and research, he wasn't a cancer at all in that clubhouse, because a cancer has to diminish performance, right? Because, you know, chemistry's function is to elevate performance. So a cancer would be to diminish performance, right? No, those teams are better than ever. So he wasn't a cancer, and neither was Kent. In fact, the two of them had incredible chemistry, but it wasn't clubhouse social chemistry. It was what I call task chemistry. So on the field, they 100% trusted the other guy to give his best. The other guy cared as much about winning as he did. And when I had long interviews with both of them, and each one said of the other, there was no one else I'd rather be on the field with than that guy. You know, like Dustin Pedroia said about Johnny Gomes, you know, 10 days out of 10 days, 100%, I want that guy on the team with me. And I also, the statistics show, somebody did a study on this, on Barry Bonds being a cancer, and they came out with the same, you know, conclusion I did, that he wasn't. And they said, because he contributes so much to winning, you know, he can't be a cancer. So then I thought, well, I know there are cancers in clubhouses. I've been in those clubhouses, as you have too. And I think the two most dangerous players in a clubhouse or locker room are the malingerer and the complainer. You know, the clubhouse lawyer, as they call each other, you know, right. The complainer, because that's really contagious. Some guys start chirping, and now all of a sudden the other guy thinks he's getting screwed by the manager too. Yeah, I'm not getting enough playing time either. And that spreads. And then the malingerer is the guy who happens to always be on the bench when, you know, he's not in the lineup when Clayton Kershaw's pitching, right? All of a sudden he's got a little knee tweak or something, right? And then the rest of the team is complaining about him being, you know, a malingerer. But a superstar, by definition, if he's performing at top level, as Barry Bonds and Jeff Kent both did, can't be a cancer because they contribute too much to winning. And also, they're weird characters generally, those guys. They're just kind of like just so weird socially that they're on that island of misfit toys all by themselves. And then the rest of the team has chemistry on their own.
Yeah, it cancels it out, basically, because these guys are so good. I mean, nobody wants a complainer who hits 183. That's for sure. You know, one of the things that came out as we're looking at a photo right now of Kent and Bonds embracing after a big hit or home run or whatever that was. And that's the image that you don't really see or hear about. You know, the lingering image is that they had a fight with each other. You know, they went after each other. But you, and we see the photo there. I mean, it's kind of grainy, but right. it was from a telecast. You know, Bonds and Kent going after each other. There was an incident there. I think it was because, as you mentioned in the book, Jeff Kent was unhappy about a throw David Bell made to second instead of just throwing to first base. And it turned into that. But as we look at these quotes, and let's start with this Barry Bonds quote, it goes to what you're talking about, that these guys, even though they got so mad at each other, they respected each other. I mean, this is what Barry Bonds was saying about, you know, folks can say whatever they want, but they're both A-type personalities.
Right, right. I can't see the quote myself, but...
Well, he said, why, you know, why do they care over what Jeff Kent is looking at as far as properties for his hunting places? Who gives a crap? When it came game time, what name would you want on the back of the uniform of the guy playing second base? I want Jeff Kent because he's a ball player. That's Barry Bonds talking about Kent. So obviously, you know, later on we hear, now in your book, we're hearing about the kind of respect that Bonds had for Kent and vice versa, too. We'll throw up that quote from Jeff Kent on team chemistry because he talks about it being built on the field and not in the clubhouse. He said, you know, it's not built on team dinners. You know, it's built, you know, if a pitcher is going to throw it at the head of someone, I've got your back. And if you don't get a hit, I'm going to bust the pitcher's ass and take him deep. I picked you up. That builds camaraderie. That builds trust. And it's a chain of unbreakable relationship that you have for a time until it gets broken because nothing's perfect. But both guys admitting that there is team chemistry when at the beginning of their conversation with you, they really weren't willing to talk about that.
Right, right. And they're right that, you know, for some people like those personalities, they do have that personality. They're not social people that, you know, the clubhouse stuff doesn't matter to them much. And, you know, you do think how really great those teams could have been if Barry Bonds had shared more of his wisdom and had been a mentor. But guys that, you know, like Michael Jordan, you know, we're all watching the documentary. To be that extraordinary, and Barry Bonds, you know, is as extraordinary in the batter's box as Michael Jordan was on the field, on the court. To be that great, you have to be so selfish, really, to put in that much time and effort and work and get your rest. And as you saw in the book, you know, Bonds talked a lot about, you know, people wanted me to, you know, I'm supposed to be playing cards and I'm supposed to be joking around and I'm supposed to be talking to the media and all that stuff. He said, you know what? I go to the field and I get my work done. And then I go home. I don't go out and have dinner with guys. I don't go out drinking. I go home and I get my rest so I can come back the next day and play as well as I can possibly play. And I believe him when he says that. You know, of course, I was in the clubhouse when he was playing and I joked with him and I said, you know, Barry, you really were a jerk, you know, and he kind of got a little, you know, like, well, you know, I was doing this and like that. I said, yes. And you really were a jerk. And I said, and I was in there, Barry. I was in the clubhouse. I saw you. I talked to you. And he's like, well, and then he, you know, as you saw in the book, he has a lot of regrets. He wishes he could have been different. I don't think he could ever have been different, because to be driven the way he was driven and to have the mindset he had, you know, he's like Steve Jobs, you know, just so driven and truly a genius. And I do think, I mean, I call Bonds a batting hitting genius in that book, in my book. And he was like Jobs. He had a terrible personality. He was abrupt. He was rude. He was self-centered, all the rest of it. But I don't think Apple, until they did get rid of Steve Jobs, they loved that Steve Jobs was there. And you just said, okay, that's Steve being Steve, and it was Barry being Barry.
Yeah, well, it worked for him at the time, but he does have regrets. You know, somebody who doesn't have regrets, and to finish up here, Mike Kruko, because the way he acted as a player is the way he is now. I mean, he's got that infectious personality, and you could tell why he was such a great leader of the Giants teams in the 80s and, you know, getting to the World Series in 1989. And that didn't happen without the culture changing in San Francisco with Candlestick Park. A lot of players didn't want to go there. But, you know, as you told the story about Al Rosen in the book, being the GM, changing the culture, bringing in Roger Craig, the Hum Baby Giants. I mean, everybody who watched them then just loved the way that team played. And the Kevin Mitchell trade was huge. And Kevin Mitchell didn't even want to play for the Giants. I mean, he helped the Mets a little bit there in the 86 World Series. He was in San Diego. And all of a sudden he gets traded to the Giants. And I think it sounded like from your book, that story about him, it sounded like he might have been ready to just retire. But he ends up having a great career with the Giants and teamed with Will Clark. They were just incredible.
Right. And the Kevin Mitchell story is really interesting because, you know, Al Rosen wasn't a big fan of his. I mean, they traded Chris Brown, the Giants third baseman, who was the classic malingerer. And Al Rosen had enough of him and, you know, shipped him off to San Diego and was really looking for the two pitchers, Dravecki and Lefferts. And then he had to take what he thought was the Padres' bad guy and sent the Padres their bad guy. And it turned out, I mean, Roger Craig and Mike Kruko and those leaders, Dravecki, they transformed Kevin Mitchell and didn't change who he was, which was great. What they did was accept him for who he was, totally accepted him, to the point where Roger Craig, when Mike Kruko heard, you know, Kevin Mitchell saying one day, it's like, I don't know why, you know, Hum Baby is just assuming, puts me my name in the lineup, assuming I'm okay. You know, he never checks. And of course, Kruko and everybody else is thinking, he didn't check on anybody. Like, they assume you came to the park today and you're ready to play. But Kevin Mitchell needed some loving up. And so, you know, Kruko tells Roger Craig about it, and Roger said, fine, takes him 2 minutes. He would go out before every game, before he posted the lineup. Hey, how you feeling, Mitch? Oh, you know, I got this neat thing. You know, I got this. And Roger Craig would say, hey, Mitch, you know, we really need you out there. All right, Hum Baby, I'm out there. You know, and it would just go on every day. And some people say, well, God, he's babying him. You know what? A great leader delivers what the player needs. A great leader delivers what the team needs. And that's what Kevin Mitchell needed. Oh, my goodness. He was the MVP, you know, I mean, the MVP, Kevin Mitchell, and beloved to this day, you know, Boogie Bear, right? I mean, just beloved.
It just goes to show that, as I said it earlier on this webcast, that as a general manager and even as a manager, you kind of have to be a psychologist, really, to be able to be good at it. Joan, thank you so much for the time. The book, it just came out today. Amazing timing by us, which was really just lucky. I wanted to have Joan on, and whoa, the book is out today, April the 28th. Intangibles, Unlocking the Science and Soul of Team Chemistry. You got to read it. You know, we got plenty of time now to read it. I'm going to read all these books after I read this again because it was so good. Joan, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Joe. This was really fun. I really appreciate it.
That's Joan Ryan, author of the book Intangibles. Coming up, we're going to hear from Ray Woodson, our regular guest here on the sportsvirus.com. And he will join us to talk about team chemistry as well right after this. We all know that solar systems make financial sense and environmental sense. And when it comes to choosing the best installation crew in the business, Sun First Solar should be your first choice. Sun First Solar has provided solar excellence since 1984. They are SunPower Elite Commercial and Elite Residential installers with a reputation for technical excellence, innovative design, fair pricing, excellent customer service, and end-to-end quality and competence. Sun First Solar is a family business devoted to treating their employees, customers, the community, and the environment with respect, and they are devoted to renewable energy and sustainability throughout the Bay Area. There is no roof or project that is too complicated. Sun First has successfully installed solar on Spanish tile roofs, metal roofs, and very steep roofs. They also have extensive experience in solar ground mounts and solar pool heating. Competitive pricing, expert consultation, and the best warranty. Go local and get your SunPower solar system from Sun First Solar today. Call Sun First Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. Before we start talking about team chemistry and the Giants and everything, you're there in Arizona, and there was that idea floated by Major League Baseball, or at least, you know, they were considering it, playing all of the games in Arizona. Now, I'm not sure what they're considering these days. I don't know that there's even going to be a Major League Baseball season, but I'm curious, Ray, what you thought of that idea, how feasible it would be in Arizona, first of all, and secondly, just in general, for players to be away from their families and constantly tested, and if that idea was feasible in your mind.
Well, I think you hit on one of the key points there for the players is being away from their families right now. That's very difficult. There's just a lot of working parts here that we have to talk about. And in terms of Arizona, are you going to be playing games outdoors? The high today is 101.
Okay? Wow.
And it's going to get down to 65 tonight. That's the nice thing about at least this time of the year. It gets a little cool at night. But even in the summertime, at nighttime, it is oppressively hot. You're going to get people out there to play those games. You can't play them all at Chase Field, which of course has a retractable roof. But how do you schedule all the games at that place? Now I've heard that they're thinking about the Rangers' new stadium. They're between Fort Worth and Dallas, and they might be able to work out something with that. But again, that's just one stadium. How are you going to work all these teams in on that? Are you going to group some in Arizona, some in Texas, some in Florida? You know, it's all, like I said, a lot of working parts that you got to get together and try to put a season together in a short period of time. And, oh, by the way, these players still have to train up. They have to go through spring training all over again, maybe a shortened version of it. And I know there's some guys that I've heard are working out at the Rangers' new stadium. And then a lot of players live here in Arizona, and I'm sure they're doing what they can as far as batting practice or drills and so forth. But, again, you have to socially distance. Obviously, if this ever happens, it's going to be without fans in the stands. But you still have staff. You still have the players. You still have the coaches. How are they going to work through this? I know they've already started in Taiwan in professional baseball there without fans in the stands, and they got it on TV, and I guess it's by subscription, and so they're making a little money that way. And I know there's a tremendous amount of money involved here, and so there's going to be a lot of impetus to bring baseball back. And I'm hearing now that, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks is their earliest date. I don't see that happening. And, you know, in California, how are you going to work that out? Are you going to be able to play any games in California? Doesn't sound like it. Not for, you know, we've got in the Bay Area, what, a stay-at-home order going till the end of May?
Yes, right now, yeah.
So like I said, a lot of working parts. On top of that, in Arizona, May is the month that's anticipated to have the peak in hospitalizations due to the coronavirus. So you throw that into the mix as well. You have a public safety risk that's still involved here, although there's been some chatter about gradually opening up. So if there is a season, and, you know, I get that there's a lot of pressure to make this happen. You got to work with the players on this, make sure they're on board. And I'm sure some of them are chomping at the bit to get back and play some real live games. I don't see it happening till later this summer at the earliest.
Yeah, I think it'll be real hard for them to be away from their families for that much time. Yeah. Maybe a very shortened season that, you know, really could work out. We'll have to see. Now, when they do get back together, this story that just materialized yesterday was a possibility of Yasiel Puig being a San Francisco Giant. Unbelievable. It's not a story that's being carried by any of the mainstream media people. And actually, heard Gabe Kapler on KNBR yesterday just completely quash it. He said, you know, no, that's not a true story. But Ray, you've heard it. So what do you think about that possibility and whether or not that's legitimate?
Well, nobody's signing anybody or nobody's going to be even talking about it right now. You just can't. Those are the rules.
Right.
So I think they just want to be as far away from any of that as they can. Now, this particular story with Puig has come up a couple of times this year. So I think there is a case of where there's smoke, there's at least embers. I'm sure there have been discussions at some point along the way. But, nothing's going to happen there until, and I understand the team not wanting to get involved in this, until there are actual games that are going to be played that they know are going to be played, and then they get into talks with players. It wouldn't surprise me, to tell you the truth, if there had been talks. I think this reporter who kind of broke the story in the last couple of days is pretty well connected with Cuban baseball. So I think he's got some sources that are probably pretty reliable. He's been pretty reliable on other things. So I don't think it's just a flyer or just a rumor. I think there is a little something to it. In some ways, it makes sense. The Giants aren't terribly deep in the outfield. There's a few veteran players. They brought Hunter Pence back, and you probably platoon some and hit against lefties, which he did very well with the Rangers last year. But overall, here's a guy who hits righties pretty well, right-handed hitter with right-handed power in that ballpark. Oracle Park, it plays better there than most left-handed power hitters who, I know they're going to bring in the fences or the wall a little bit, but still they get robbed of a lot of home runs from the left-handed side. And Farhan Zaidi has a prior relationship with Yasiel Puig when he was with the Dodgers. He knows the player well.
Right.
And he knew the 22-year-old Puig. We're talking about the 29-year-old Puig now, who, by the way, was fairly popular when he was in Cincinnati last year. So maybe he has grown a little bit. And of course, for the Giants, it gets you talking about it, right? And there wasn't a whole lot of excitement heading into this season. All respect to Kevin Gausman, who may end up being a pretty good pickup for the dollar for them, but I don't think anybody's flocking for season tickets for signings like that. Oh, he's a good valuation player. I don't see people who are assessing whether to buy season tickets talking in those terms. They want to get excited about something. In a good way and a bad way, this would get people excited about talking about the Giants. And, it'll be a full house when the Diamondbacks come in and Baumgartner's pitching. Right? So there's all sorts of things to consider. And, by the way, he's still a pretty good ball player. And, yeah, he was it was just an unusual set of circumstances. Somebody who just was brought over from Cuba under somewhat surreptitious circumstances with some shady individuals getting him there. I heard from the story, he damn near died on the boat trip over. It was very harrowing to get over to the United States. And then, he's not familiar with Major League culture at all. And he's 22 years old. He's got all this money. And all of a sudden, he's making contributions on a Major League team. And now he's in a whole new world. How do you handle that if you're Yasiel Puig? Try to put yourself in his shoes. And I know people are yelling at me now. What are you talking about, Ray? He's Yasiel Puig. He's the clubhouse cancer and all that. Well, yeah, sometimes he was. But he's, like I said, you would hope that if Farhan Zaidi sees something in him, if Gabe Kapler sees something in him, even though right now he's poo-pooing the reports, I think there's a little something to it. Is it going to happen? Who knows? But I wouldn't totally discount it. And for a team that needs power, I mean, he's out there. And maybe it just comes down to the right signing price.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, definitely a respected Cuban journalist that put it out there, Francis Romero. So, if it comes to fruition, give him all the credit in the world for having that before anybody else. But, man, for me, just to think about seeing Puig in a Giant, like you said, a Giants uniform and then facing Baumgartner in a Diamondbacks uniform. The only thing I could think of that could compare to that would have been seeing Tommy Lasorda as Giants manager. That's the only thing.
Well, I'll give you an example. It's the way Dodger fans felt when they signed Juan Marichal in 1975,
yeah,
at the end of his career, right? I mean, it was only 10 years earlier that he had the fight with Johnny Roseborough that got very ugly. And Willie Mays had to break it up in August of 1965 at Candlestick. So, in the end, though, it's a business. And I guarantee you that if Yasiel Puig comes to San Francisco, and he's got the personality, but if the results come with it, if he hits a walk-off home run or something like that, there will be some fans who warm up to him. I would guarantee it. It all goes back to performance. And then the chemistry follows that.
Let's talk about the chemistry. We're talking about it with Joan Ryan, about team chemistry. And certainly the Giants have had that, you know, in their World Series years. But it is interesting. You mean, you think about the speeches that Hunter Pence gave, and that is always the, you know, the video or the image that we kind of point to and think about. But I also go back to when the Giants won the World Series, when Melky Cabrera was on the team. Now, that was 2012, right? Yeah, 2012. Right. Melky Cabrera is on the team. He is suspended. He's done. And it's, I don't know, what is it, July or August, right? And I'm thinking there's no way this team is going to do well without Melky Cabrera, and they're not going to be able to survive this type of adversity. They did. They won the World Series. So that goes to show that sometimes, you know, team chemistry can work a lot of different ways.
Well, you better have the structure in the clubhouse to begin with, right? And they had a strong structure in place by 2012, and it was centered around the young veteran players, Buster Posey, Madison Bumgarner, and so forth. And then they brought in Marco Scudero, who, along with being a good clubhouse presence and a respected veteran, was on fire. He hit 360 for the Giants down the stretch in 2012. So you have the chemistry that was already there, and you have the results, which certainly helped the chemistry. I think of a quote by Michael Jordan. We're watching The Last Dance this week, and it's a phenomenal documentary, by the way. And he said, you know, talent wins games, but teamwork and intelligence wins championships. And I think that's where you have to cross over. And by the way, that was a great talk with Joan Ryan, and I'm looking forward to reading her book. It sounds great. I mean, she's got stories that go back way back into the 80s in Giants history. So I'll be very much looking forward to that and checking notes, especially with the last 10 or 15 years of players I ran across. But it all comes back to winning, sure. But there has to be some level of mutual trust in there to get that going. And, you know, that Joan mentioned it with Bonds and Kent. Everybody thought that it was just clubhouse poison, but they didn't care about anything but what happened on the field. And those two produced like no duo in baseball at the time, or very few duos in baseball at a time. And so they kind of played off of each other, the left-handed power and the right-handed power in the middle of that lineup. They were damn near lethal. They didn't quite get it done for various reasons in the 2002 World Series, but they were right there. I think it's just a combination of things when you're talking about chemistry. Let's put it this way, and I said this a lot on post-game shows over the years. Chemistry is always there when you win in some form or another, right? Everybody's along for the ride when you're winning, when you're going all the way. So there has to be some sort of framework to begin with. And it varies with different sports. I mean, we go back to the Oakland A's in the 70s. There were a lot of fights among those guys, but obviously there was some mutual trust when they were on the field. I think that where it really gets tested is when things go wrong. And in a long season, there are going to be fights. There are going to be disagreements. There is going to be grievances. As human nature, we remember the bad moments way more than we remember a lot of the good moments. You know, it's something that's in our wiring, and we remember every single moment and every single word that was said or punch that was thrown. And that's where it takes a manager, obviously, to handle this stuff. And that's where chemistry really comes in, where you handle the bad moments and you're able to go past them and sometimes keep them in the clubhouse so it's not talked about by the general public. And they're not asking you about it so that you're still thinking about it. You find a way to move on to it and focus on your primary task.
It is funny, though, how, you know, some of the great talent can cancel it out. You mentioned the A's teams. What about the Yankees? The Bronx is burning and all that. And you had a manager in Billy Martin who is as combative as ever. I mean, he's inciting some of those players, especially Reggie Jackson. And how'd they get through that? You know, great talent. And like you said, yeah, the trust, even though these guys might not like each other off the field or even sometimes on the field, they do trust each other and they respect each other's abilities.
That's it. And I remember talking to Peter Golenbach, who wrote a book about that period for the Yankees. And I think a lot of it was from Greg Nettles' point of view. We had him on a show in another city at another time. But he was talking about, yeah, I mean, there are guys who culturally, it wasn't a great fit. I mean, you had Thurman Munson on that team, Billy Martin, Reggie Jackson, so forth. But there wasn't any one of those guys that wouldn't want Reggie in the middle of the lineup for the threat that he presented and the fact that he did produce at big moments. They all wanted him in there because that was, you know, in the end, that was their goal, was to win. And you just had to overlook a lot of stuff. Now, there are times where it all comes together and you've got a good culture and you get the results. And, hey, it's hunky-dory. It's rainbows and unicorns and all that. It doesn't happen all that often. When it does, it's special. I think of the Golden State Warriors, especially in 2015, the tremendous clubhouse chemistry they had. Joan mentioned the 2010 Giants. And they had, you talk about an assortment of characters. And it's always a science experiment, an anthropology experiment, when you bring 25 or now 26 players together in a clubhouse or a locker room and try to make it work, try to make all their individual different roles work. And it's fascinating to watch year to year to see the kind of personalities that get thrown into the mix and see if they don't mess up what's cooking in the oven.
Yeah, you definitely have your favorites. I mean, for me, Corey Guerin was definitely one of my favorites on the Giants to interview. Yeah, and then other players around baseball. I mean, Chipper Jones. Believe it or not, Milton Bradley gave me an interview one time that was unbelievably great. And it was completely unexpected because of, you know, the reputation that he had. I'm sure you had a few of those too, right?
Well, Joe mentioned Johnny Gomes, and I happened to catch Johnny on the field after they clinched the division championship for the A's in 2012. They came back against the Rangers. Remember Josh Hamilton dropping a fly ball in center field on that fateful day. And they're all celebrating on the field afterwards. And I talked to Johnny about that very thing, about how the chemistry seemed to be so good on that team. And then he started squaring. He said, yeah, it was effing great. Oh, I'm sorry. I said, no. You wouldn't be you if you didn't talk that way. I'll edit it later. And he said it was a big part of it, you know, just the fact that they believe in each other. And you hear that from a lot of teams that win. And it sounds cliche. But if you have to look at these people every single day in a confined space in the clubhouse and then go out in the field or be with them in the dugout or the bullpen or whatever, there has to be some level, functioning level of civility. You can't hate each other. So in that respect, yeah, it's about chemistry. And, you know, I've seen teams that didn't win and they had good chemistry and they had good talent too. And you wondered what went wrong, but sometimes it's a random game. We have to remember that too. And I think the players understand that as well. There's a lot of randomness involved. And so, you know, you do what you can to prepare. But in the end, yeah, I think all things being equal, you'd rather have chemistry.
That's Ray Woodson. Want to thank him and author Joan Ryan with the book Intangibles coming out, Unlocking the Science and Soul of Team Chemistry. Go pick up the book that just came out today, Tuesday, April the 28th. Join us again next week. We have Ahmed Farid lined up, the former NBC Sports Bay Area host who is now working for NBC Sports. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.